Hello, and welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast, where we watch a series of movies all in one day and discuss them afterwards. My name is Matthew, and today I'm joined by Josh.
Gene.
Richard.
Hello there.
And Amanda.
I am Wolverine.
Just so you know, this is part two of a two-part Cinemarathon podcast, so if you haven't heard the first part, go back and listen to that one before you listen to this one. All right, so the next movie in the X-Men franchise is First Class.
I really enjoyed this movie when it first came out.
Yeah.
I still enjoy it.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I like it still, but I don't love it still.
I think in the whole scheme of the podcast, or the marathon that day, I was just underwhelmed, and so that bled into this movie, too, unfortunately for me.
Hmm.
But it was fine. Fassbender is awesome.
Fassbender Magneto is the whole entire reason this movie is great, though Kevin Bacon is pretty good, too.
Yeah.
And I would say, even though Wolverine and Hugh Jackman are the central focus of all of these movies and the series, and probably the best part of all of the movies, I'd say that Magneto in this takes the crown.
Yeah, like, for sure.
Oh, definitely.
Well, I mean, especially because Wolverine isn't in this, except, well, actually, this is a movie that uses Wolverine the best, probably.
Yeah.
Where he's just in one scene. And just tells him to fuck off, and that's it. It's
absolutely
great.
Yeah, it really got the attitude of Wolverine down pat in one line. But yeah, Fassbender, he just sort of came in and really took over everything that I care about in this franchise is now basically solely him going down and hunting Nazis.
It is interesting that this movie starts the same way as the first X-Men movie started.
Yes. Yeah.
With the concentration camps.
Yeah, they basically take footage from the original footage of the Holocaust in the first movie and then expand upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was what happens
as soon as he's done wrenching, as soon as they hit him in the head with that rifle, but then they take him into a room and Kevin Bacon's there.
Yeah, which actually is a really awesome intro into this new universe and everything they created. Although in discovering the evil behind, or they put a face to the evil, like with Kevin Bacon, and you see that he's been like torturing and running experiments on Jews and everything, that I find it strange that Magneto as a child has this unbelievable force and power and watches his own mother get killed and then does not use the power to kill the man that just killed his mother. I think is really, really strange. Although we later discover sort of why it might not have worked.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon's power is energy, absorption, and redirection.
Yeah. So when I first watched the movie, and I guess because I forgot about Kevin Bacon's powers, I kind of kept, every time I watch that scene, I'm like, that's weird. Why did he only kill those two guys? Because he didn't even attempt to kill Kevin Bacon.
Didn't throw anything at him or...
Yeah, nothing. I think that's what bothers me about it. It's like, oh, you just watched him murder your mother and you're just going to kill the two lackeys?
Do you think that when he killed the lackeys, everyone in the room was supposed to get killed? Like Kevin Bacon was supposed to get killed and then it just didn't affect him?
The way he killed the lackeys was by crushing their helmets.
Oh, that's true.
And Kevin Bacon was not wearing one.
That's a really cool way to do it too.
Yeah.
Super rad.
Yeah, just a simple way to an effective way to just kill someone without it being like
especially
too violent.
Nazis.
is this movie PG-13?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so they did some pretty cool stuff in a PG-13 movie. They got away with some shit in this.
Yeah, I think the first time I saw it, I was really impressed by James McAvoy's character in that to see Professor X as a youth and him be this very charming, smart young guy. I thought that was a fun take on him because he's so stoic in the other movies.
And using his mental and conning abilities to seduce women.
Yeah.
That is a very groovy mutation.
Just every time.
But it makes sense. Like, that's exactly what a young Professor X would do. You know, it's like a young mutant who had these kind of powers.
Yeah.
We all want to know what women want, right?
Exactly. I'd actually rather watch that movie than watch this movie.
That's not true.
That's not true at all. But as far as just visual style, though, I think X-Men First Class just trumps every other X-Men movie. Like, the second Singer got out of there. First Class even, I think, looked... No, not Last Stand, I think, even looked better. And then once we got to first class, it was like, oh, this looks like a real movie now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually put together with real lighting, real cinematography. And it just, it feels really nice.
Yeah, it didn't have the cheese that the other movies had.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think, and I think being a product of the time that it was supposed to take in place in helped. Because, like, with X-Men, it's kind of the present, but could also be maybe be just a little bit into the future. So you have, like, the mansion has all these perfectly smooth and clean corridors of, like, super futuristic metals and whatnot. And this, it's just like, oh, they're at the humble beginnings. It's the house. It's still, it's an old-time house.
Yeah.
The training, underground training stuff is all still just concrete.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's no, like, super space-age materials or anything like that. So it was really simplistic and just, I felt that made it more real.
Yeah. Well, I think it being a time, like a period piece, really helped that aesthetic.
Yeah.
Because they had this ability now to not have to be super modern, super sci-fi cool anymore. It was just about, like, how do we get this into the time period and make it believable?
Right.
And that obviously the 60s was a much more interesting time design-wise, too.
Right.
So it, that that also helps.
Oh, but, yeah. And the first thing we got to see was, like, Rose burning her undies after that, after the opening scene, which always fun. Like, going into, like, a Playboy-ish nightclub. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I just remembered that, and it was important, and I had to say that Rose Byrne is in her underwear.
Yeah, I actually always forget that she's even in this movie. She's such a non-character to me in this.
But she's an important character overall.
Yeah, she has influence, but just, I don't know, maybe it's just her performance. One of she's kind of flat.
Doesn't she play Moira MacTaggart?
Yeah, she's Moira.
Yeah, so she's the one of the other, forget about X-Men 3, we're recasting this recasting this person because Trask gets recast. And
yeah, Olivia Williams played Moira in the previous films, which is the actress from Rushmore and stuff, and she was fine. Again, sort of forgettable.
Yeah,
I guess that character in general is just kind of forgettable to me. But you know, overall, the style just went in a much better direction than the previous movies had.
Let's do a rundown of the story just to recap. So we find all the X-Men, or like Mystique is still with Professor X, right? Jennifer Lawrence, who's wonderful. I love Jennifer Lawrence. I don't know if she was the perfect Mystique by any means, but I still like her.
Yeah, she's a good actress. Well, but
I was always curious about how Professor X pulls that off. I mean, obviously, he probably just uses mental ability to say, oh, yeah, by the way, you have a daughter, mom and dad. Did you not know that?
Yeah.
Like, because if Mystique's living at the house, I'm assuming she's assuming a human form similar to the Jennifer Lawrence human form just as a child.
Yeah.
And Ben just lives at the house.
Yeah.
They don't really go into it. Like, cause obviously, like, the parents are there.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, she pretends to be the mom. So obviously the mom lives at the house. So how they went about just keeping her a secret was not a big deal, but just something I always thought about.
Well, I guess it helps that you live in a castle.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and the mom was never around, right? Wasn't that the point, that his parents just didn't really care about him?
Well, yeah. I mean, the scene where we discover Mystique's real identity, you'd basically discover it because she's being loving to him.
Yeah, and he's like, that's not my mother.
Yeah, he'd never been treated that way.
So when James McAvoy's character as Professor X went off to school and became a professor, what was Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique doing? Was she in school? Like,
I think she was, wasn't she? Or
I feel like she would have to be, right? I mean, she wasn't just locked in a, like, she wasn't like Rapunzel, like, locked away in a tower or something.
Didn't address it, really. I don't think.
Yeah. I'm just like developing her character mentally. I'm wondering what she studied and what she,
political science and, you know,
assassination and kung fu.
Kicking ass. Majored in kicking ass.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they just kind of, they gloss over that whole section of their relationship, which, I don't know, might, could have been interesting, I guess. Like, it's not something I desperately needed to move the plot for.
No. I like I said, I was just mentally developing her character.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does Professor X and Magneto meet?
They were looking for someone, and they were looking for that particular ship, and they managed to determine where it was.
Yeah, so Professor X was working for the government, like using his powers to like seek out, you know, and help with missions that they needed extra help on.
And then Fassbender was on a mission to murder Kevin
Bacon. Yeah, because Fassbender, oh, that's right, because he came out of the water, like the in the 60s style, like turtleneck wetsuit, like, or whatever, and then and discovered him in part of that process.
Yeah, and that's when they decided to join force and start recruiting.
Yeah.
Right. And then the recruitment was fun, except I really hate all of the Young Mutants.
Yeah.
It was so boring.
All of them? Like, there are a few that are, like, Beast.
I thought Beast was fine.
Beast is okay.
Is it Banshees in this one?
Yeah, Banshees in this one.
I actually liked him. He was just a little different. Everybody else, I could give a fuck. Havoc?
I think Havoc was okay. I'm not saying Havoc was good, but I don't think he was bad. I hated
the stripper chick, the fairy.
Yeah, who spits fireballs. Yeah.
Lenny Kravitz's daughter, Zoe Kravitz.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That really was her?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then, we can all agree that we love Darwin, right, guys?
Fuck Darwin. I hate that dude. It's a shit character.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, I know we're jumping ahead a bit, but the way Darwin dies doesn't make sense to me. If his whole thing is that he can adapt to any situation,
adapt to death,
then he should be able to adapt to an energy ball. Like, seriously, like, if then you're just a shitty mutant if that your one power gives you no help when it really counts.
Is that Kevin Bacon's lackey, the one that's like Nightcrawler?
Azazel.
Yeah, that guy's great. That was cool.
Yeah, his makeup was cool. Like, he didn't do a whole lot, but when he was around, I liked him.
It was an interesting use of his character because in the comics, he's like, he's Nightcrawler's dad, and he's, like, super ancient and really old. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's why people think the devil looks like him, because he's been around so long enough that they're like, that guy's the devil. And
that's awesome.
I just like how he dispatches people. He just grabs them, teleports up 1,000 feet, then teleports back down, grabs someone else, and he just bodies just raining down.
Yeah, it's really scary. Awesome.
It's really horrifying. See, that scene where... This is the thing. It felt like such a filler where all the Young Mutants are like hanging out, letting their powers loose. You know, it just was so cheesy and shitty. And it was like, hey, choose. Do you want to come with us or do you want to die? And it was just, I don't know. It was really boring.
And coming up with code names.
Yeah.
Their code names. Yeah. That's so cheesy.
Yeah. It's kind of cornball.
You shoot fire. I'm going to call you Fireball Face. You know, it's like every one of them.
Your Fireball Island and your Monopoly.
And your Crossfire.
I'm Parcheesi.
Yeah, I mean, that whole... Yeah, everything related to the Young Mutants, I would have cut from the movie, honestly.
Me too.
I would have just focused on more mutants that are interesting and I care more about in that universe.
So you would have just done a whole movie about Magneto hunting down Nazis?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
For sure.
I would have done 10 movies about Magneto hunting down Nazis.
That was the original thing they were going to do. Because when they started developing movies after X3, it was going to be an X-Men Origins Wolverine and X-Men Origins Magneto. And I remember thinking, X-Men Origins Magneto sounds really dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so fucking wrong.
Yeah.
I wish I could have a whole movie of just of him doing that awesome
It was
stuff.
The best part of the movie. It really was.
Yeah.
Everything him.
It's
and
the best part of the whole franchise.
So far, yeah. It's really great.
Well, we can blame that on X-Men Origins Wolverine. Because that movie just had such a horrible response that movie, Magneto got axed. And I guess whatever ideas they were planning on using got integrated into this. Mm. So, but at least we got a little bit of it.
Yeah.
You know, we got a little taste of what that could have been.
Is it in Bolivia, that scene where he's in the bar?
It's Argentina.
Argentina. That scene's so great.
Yeah.
Where he just takes on those two Nazis.
It felt very Tarantino, funny enough.
Well, yeah, because it's very Inglorious Bastards.
It really was, yeah. It felt like, and that's why it was great. It stood apart from the rest of the scenes in the movie. It's like, how do you go from that scene to, hey, we're teenage mutants talking about our shit? Like, so boring.
Well, the thing I think that really works with the Argentina scene... Again, it's one of the rare moments in the franchise where they really consider each, like, the power of the mutant involved in the scene and choreographed something really interesting with it. You know, it's just, he could have just walked in there and just took some knives and just shot it at him or something.
Right.
Like, that's what something Bryan Singer would do. But with this, you know, he has... You know, he's slowly, you know, like, controlling things and bringing the tension up and throwing the knife and then grabbing it back, putting it in the guy's hand. Like, it was really well thought out, especially, like, to reflect, like, his anger and his passion in the scene. But,
well, because his goal wasn't only just to kill him, it was to get information.
Exactly.
Because he's on a mission to find Kevin Bacon
and
to do what he should have done when he first met him.
Yeah, which is try to kill him, although it wouldn't have worked, that, you know, we discover later. But yeah, I don't know. The Young Mutants, I think, should have gone and then given me other characters from the comics I cared more about.
I do think that the when Kevin Bacon breaks into the facility or the secret, you know, CIA where the mutants are being held, that was a cool scene. All the fighting and stuff with the agents was neat.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That was well choreographed. It was well timed, and I thought everything in it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like really horrified for all of those just normal guys, you know, and the CIA trying to fight these mutants. It's just, they didn't even stand a chance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a massacre.
Yeah.
Everybody's dead. We got to get the fuck out of here.
That's a Halloween Resurrection reference, if anybody knows. Busta Rhymes.
Busta.
But yeah, as far as what are, I guess we should just really quickly before we move on into the plot, just are there any other major characters that like we need to introduce or discuss?
When we talk about what's Emma Frost or what?
January Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
The graphics on her looks awful. Like
the CG's terrible.
Diamond boobies.
Yeah.
Although that scene where she seduces the guy, not her part of that scene.
This is a funny scene.
But when they like go in, like then they break into that, that was amazing.
Yeah, and he's just like on the bed, like for you know, by like himself, kissing the air or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Matthew Vaughn's an interesting director because he clearly has one style. He has an interesting style. But he also seems to be a pretty intelligent person. But then you have these glaringly weird, not good scenes in almost all of his movies. Kick-Ass, I actually liked a lot more than I would have ever expected to. But again, there's just scenes in that where it's just like, get it out. Cut it out. I don't know if it's maybe he's like locked into having certain actors that he may not want, or he just doesn't know how to direct certain people. But yeah, January Jones was a piss poor cast.
She's just always been bad. I don't think she's a good actress.
I mean, in that way, I would say a good director would have said, no, you're not being cast as this character, as Emma Frost, because you can't act at all. But somehow she got in. I don't know.
It's because she's pretty.
Yeah.
I will say this just as devil's advocate. I don't think she's a good actress, and I don't think she is good in this movie. But her character is not a very charismatic character. She's very cold and very, like, bitchy.
Yeah.
So.
But resting bitch face, you could. There's a plenty of actresses out there that could make that work. And she. Because I don't even. Like, when she acts bitchy or, like, badass, it doesn't. I don't even buy that. It's just like, you just look like a girl who walked onto set and is like having playtime right now. You don't even seem like you're the caliber of anyone else in this film.
Yeah.
I do like their interactions, her interaction with Kevin Bacon, where she thinks she's hot stuff and like Kevin Bacon just is not into it.
Yeah, yeah. And he kind of treats her like a dick.
Yeah.
And then he asks her to go get a drink for him or something.
Yeah, like he's like saying, can you tell what I'm thinking? He's like, oh no, I was thinking this drink could use a little more ice.
But that's all Kevin Bacon. Like, that's all him being amazing, which I have this love-hate thing with Kevin Bacon because I think he's an okay actor, but he's obviously saturated. Like, he just, obviously, 6 degrees of that whole thing.
Right.
And he's become such a joke, like, in many ways, that anytime he gets cast in something, I'm very wary of it. Because I just feel
it
he's
going to...
It takes me out.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, he really won me over. Because he just went to 11 on the evil grin scale. And
well, there's that one scene that you just absolutely love.
Yeah, it's like the scene where you basically witness him planning the destruction of the Earth. And it zooms out and he puts the sticker of a bomb on a map and then just like mugs for camera. And it's like the best thing in this whole movie.
Because it's such a cartoon, 60s cartoon map.
Yeah.
And then there's a big oversized magnetic
bomb
piece that he must have had custom.
Yeah, like someone made that. Like, yeah. I need a
just
bomb
so he
could
slap it on Cuba.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Just... that's what I want more in comic book movies, just to know, which actually, I guess, well, I just want to mention this, is that we saw Guardians of the Galaxy last night, and pretty good, like, enjoyable, but it did, I think, in a good way, tap into the self-awareness a little bit better than a lot of comic book movies have in the past few years. Just the ability to say, yeah, we're kind of silly, but that's okay, that's fun, too.
Yeah.
So I'm glad Kevin Bacon brought that to this movie. I think it really helped it a lot, actually. As far as the kids are concerned as well, I think one of the most important scenes in the movie, especially special effects wise and stuff, was the training montage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of fun, I guess. I wasn't overwhelmed by it. I don't think it was could have been as interesting. I mean, I don't think it was as interesting as it could have been. Again, Magneto, I thought, was the best part of it.
Yeah.
Like him trying to they mold the satellite or whatever.
Right. Well, because like Professor X shows him that like positive feelings can be stronger than negative feelings.
Yeah.
Like Monsters University, or Inc.
Monsters Inc. Yeah.
Like Monsters Inc.
Yeah. Laughter is much better than tears or screams. Exactly. But yeah, it was, you know, it sufficed. Mm. And added a nice sort of like 60s flair the way it was edited and everything. It had like a Thomas Crown Affair feel.
Yeah.
Oh, all the sets look really good in this.
Yeah, they actually did really look good.
I was watching it with Shelby, and like every scene she was like, I wish I could live in that room. Like,
yeah.
Which I was like, yeah, me too.
I wish I could live on that boat. Wish I could live on that submarine.
Yeah.
I wish I could live with that Fossbender.
Yeah. Mm. Don't we all?
Yes.
We all do.
All right.
We're all 100%
Ladies, calm down.
Whew, did it get hot in here?
Get off my Kool-Aid, Amanda.
Turn on the
equipment. He's going to burn up here.
Turn on the AC. Oh, God. But yeah, I think for me, especially this movie is longer than it should be. I feel like, I think it was like about 2 hours. I think, again, it could have been about 90. But I think the climax of the movie actually is justified. Like, by the time you get to that moment, I feel that you've really understood the relationship between Magneto and Professor X and why they split ways by the end of the movie. And that's a pretty difficult thing to convey in just one film, I think. Because that we get it, like, in the cartoons and stuff, it covers seasons. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. But the fact that they meet, they discover each other's powers, they help each other through something, become friends, and then fall out in like 2 hours is, I think, impressive as far as script writing is concerned.
I was always disappointed for the ending when they have a falling out. Obviously, Magneto is against the humans and Professor X is not. And so when that happened at the end of the movie, I was like, oh, I'm so bummed. Like, I liked their relationship. I wanted to see them be pals longer. It's like, we all know the story of them being adversaries. Like, I'd much rather continue that, which is what I thought was interesting with the next movie, which I'll go into.
In Days of Future Past.
Yeah, because I was so disappointed. I just assumed that they were going to be torn apart at this point, you know? And I was like, that's so quick, you know?
Yeah.
Why couldn't they live in this longer? And really, you know, he didn't mean to shoot him. You know, it's like, not, I don't know.
There's, I think, so many things. I think what Fassbender brought to the role was desperation. Yep. I think you could. So although I agree with you, we could have had like another movie where they were still together and then fallen out. I think the intensity that Magneto brings to this film, especially with like the whole Nazi hunting, watching his mother die, like, I could see why by the time you get to the age they're at now, he's already ready to move on and become, you know, who he's bound to be.
Yeah.
I think it was handled fairly well, but I can understand wanting to see that Magneto Professor X relationship last longer.
Yeah.
But I also don't feel that Magneto is definitely going to break away and do things his way, which Professor X disagrees with, we don't get the level at which he's going to go until Days of Future Past, and you say, oh god, he's really willing to go super far.
Yeah.
Because Professor X tells Mystique to go with him.
Yeah.
Like maybe you can help keep him grounded, keep him level headed, don't let things get out of hand. Because he trusts Magneto enough to take care of Mystique.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah, which was like really in the love of his life, honestly. I mean, even if it wasn't like in a romantic way, I mean, it was like his kindred spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So to lose her to the one person who just paralyzed you and is probably trying to take over the world, and be okay with knowing that she's going with him, I thought was an interesting,
interesting choice. And I think the arc with her was great. She always wanted Professor X, but he always told her to hide herself.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Fassbender always told her to be herself. And yeah.
Which was an awesome and believable reason for Mystique's transition.
Right. Yeah, it really laid out her foundation very well, I thought. Yeah. They did a good job of explaining it. You know, she was always ashamed. And at first it was interesting because Professor X wasn't that way. He was like, you're welcome here.
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny that his you're welcome to be here under these circumstances, sort of, you know. Whereas Magneto's was like, you're welcome and be yourself, you know.
Yeah.
You know how much energy it takes for you to maintain that, the normal looking body? Just relax, you know?
Well, it's interesting that which I had never considered, but because I've always known Professor X as this like bald dude floating in a wheelchair, sci-fi wheelchair, you know what I mean? But like him being young and him being attractive and his only mutation is, you know, is ESP, you realize that that is a much different experience.
Oh, yeah.
Than it would
no
be.
No one could tell.
Yeah, because no one could tell. And he didn't quite understand the perspective of Mystique not wanting to have to hide herself.
Well, they're complete opposite mutants. Yeah. You know, his, yeah, he could hide it and she couldn't. You know, she could, but it with a lot of energy.
Yeah. I thought it was, I mean, although it helps with the influence of Mystique's transition to going with Magneto, I thought it was interesting that the whole, like, sort of romantic love scene thing between them, I thought was a little forced.
Well, I think that's exactly the point. She's trying, she needs to be loved by someone and it's not happening, so she is going to force it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, also, I don't really get the impression that, like, Magneto bites at that moment, right?
He has sex with her.
Does he?
No.
Doesn't he?
No.
Are you
no,
sure?
No.
That was just what you did afterwards.
Are you sure? They never hook
no.
up?
No, they don't hook
not
up.
He basically just says, like, quit trying to be somebody else, be yourself, and then
I find you more attractive this way.
And like, then kind of after the lesson is dispatched, he kind of just says, like, also, we have a busy day tomorrow or something like that. And I should probably get back to bed.
I don't know why I confuse that. To go back and watch that scene, see why I got all discombobulated.
I like that because he tells her she's too young, and so she morphs into Rebecca Romijn.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah. That was a clever device, and it's cool that she just came back for that like one scene.
Would you lie naked in a bed for like
10 seconds?
Here's, yeah.
Here's $80,000.
Yeah, exactly. Done.
Was it worth every penny?
Absolutely. The final battle at in Cuba, I thought was cool. It was well handled. The action was pretty good, other than the wasp flying around looked really stupid.
It wasn't the wasp, but it was like, I think her name is Pixie, but yeah.
Okay, Pixie or whatever her name was.
That's an awesome Kravitz. Like slang name for that wasp.
But yeah, I think her flying just looked weird compared to all the other flying, I think is what threw me off. Like the way it was shot was much different.
Because like, I don't know. People do this thing like with the fairy type flying, where their legs are always like curled weird.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. It always just bothers me. Like I don't know what I would do. I guess if I was flying, like how I would hang.
Yeah. What would you do? But
I don't know if I would like arc my legs like I had to go to the bathroom all the time. Like I was just like
clinching. Like flamingos at like one leg.
Yeah. I don't know. And just it is weird. Because obviously she's like on wires and like she doesn't make like the rotation turns properly when she's because they're just basically comping her to go, oh, now I'm going left, now I'm going right.
Yeah.
And they just slide her across the frame. She's not like turning like in flight and like arcing. People can't see that I'm actually making these manipulations.
He's showing us.
But yeah, I mean, it's weird. I thought it was just a weird choice to set her in this weird handheld like shooting from a distance thing. But then you have Banshee. And you have full CG, like, comping, and I don't know, it just really stood out for me. But the flight suits look fucking great. The blue and yellow is, like, one of the coolest-looking costumes in the whole franchise.
For sure.
Just looked awesome. I actually, the second I saw the trailer, I hadn't even seen the movie yet, but went online to see if there was anyone who was, like, producing replicas for, like, Halloween. Because I was like, man, I would kill to have one of those lying around. It just looks awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and then I do have to mention that Michael Ironside is in this.
Yeah,
scene.
If you didn't, I was going to.
Yeah, as the American general at the conflict, and I mean he doesn't really bring much to the scene, but I just like him.
Yeah, it's just fun to see him. Oh, the whole backdrop of the Cuban Missile Crisis, and just being set against that the missile crisis was engineered. Was an engineered thing by Kevin Bacon to start a war.
Yeah. For his bomb map scenario.
I liked all of that aspect of it.
Yeah.
I like that they tie in real history and, you know, it makes it very, as I said, it takes the cheese out of it, you know, it makes it way less cheesy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, I'm always sort of hesitant to include fictional stories into real historical context because sometimes the logic behind them is kind of like
Wolverine and like Deadpool destroying the Three Mile
yeah,
Island.
Destroying it rather than just having an issue.
But it was handled well in this. I didn't really have any moments where I was like, I don't agree with this taking place during the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Right. So. And then the final scene was, I thought was great between Fassbender, Magneto, and Kevin Bacon's character.
Yeah, that's a gnarly kill.
It's crazy. Yeah. He puts the coin through his head.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, like Professor X has to hold him mentally, and so he's kind of like merged with him. So the whole time that Fassbender is putting the coin through his head, like Professor X
is feeling it too, yeah. Which is nuts,
and is begging him not to do it.
Yeah,
like, please don't do it. Just has to deal with it.
So crazy, but that was rad.
Yeah,
and he comes out with the helmet. That was badass.
Yeah.
But I love when he freezes Kevin Bacon in mid helmet grab. He's got this like the derpiest look on it. So he's like, "Whoa, my helmet!" It's so funny looking. And then he has to hold that derp face while like Magneto's like throwing a coin through his head.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was interesting that they gave the origin of Magneto's helmet was.
It was somebody else's.
Somebody else's. It was like, okay, I'll allow it. I did like the way it looked as silver, though. Mm. I wish they had just left Magneto in the blue and yellow flight suit with the silver helmet.
Really? Because I think that he looks his most Magneto-iest in the next movie.
In Days of Future Past. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he looked good in that one, too.
I think he looks really good in that.
Yeah.
Not to get ahead of ourselves.
They did a good job with him in the new movie. But, I don't know. Just something really appealed to me about the blue and yellow and the silver. Just, it was a cool scheme. Is there anything else about First Class?
It was a welcome change from the other movies.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It was refreshing after watching the first three and four. Four and just being totally annoyed by most of them.
Actually, it's pretty smooth sailing from here on comparatively.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The latter half of the marathon.
Yeah, the last three were definitely like, I think, probably the strongest offerings.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So the next movie we watched was The Wolverine. Yeah, so...
Pleasant surprise.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say this is my favorite movie in the series.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
Putting it out there.
It makes sense because it's the simplest story and it's not overcomplicated. There's not tons of characters. All the characters that are there are like characters to support this Wolverine story that is one of his most popular stories. It's a very different take on it, but like,
yeah.
It's like his iconic... first run as a solo character.
I think for me it was refreshing to watch a movie in this series which is so much about ensemble and have it brought down to a single character.
Absolutely.
Even more so than Origins was.
Well, Origins had like other characters.
Yeah, it was focusing on all these other things, but this was just about Wolverine, his conflict, his story, and it was nice. It was just nice to have a simple story.
Real claws.
Yeah, we're back to real metal claws. And
why would you ever not do real claws?
It's so much less work, too.
Like, they have them. They're in a drawer somewhere.
Yeah.
Just go get them.
They're cheaper. Like, how much do you think they spent on CG claws in X-Men Origins?
Yeah.
Literally, probably tens of thousands of dollars, minimum. I get
that sometimes it's got to be CG claws when he's, like, flying through the air and then lands on something.
Yeah.
Like, you're talking practical.
Practical,
versus CG.
Yeah.
But just when he's in a pose, right. He's got his claws out. Because when they're CG claws, my big issue is like okay, now just clench your fist like you have claws out, and he would just hold his fist. But when you have to actually hold the metal practical effects in between his fingers in order to keep them steady, and you can see the muscles tensing, that feels so much more real. Like he's not just holding claws, like they're the muscles are of them extending.
Engaging them.
Yeah. And it just
an
looks
extension of him.
Yeah, it looks so much better than just just keep my fists closed because they're gonna CG claws.
Yeah, and I know you had mentioned too while watching Origins that the shadows just are never right.
Yeah,
which is a hard thing to animate. But just why animate something you have sitting around? Mm. I don't know. Just very strange. But we're back to real claws in this, and he just looks cool in this movie.
He looks there's a popular internet comparison between the first X-Men movie and this movie in terms of how Hugh Jackman looks as Wolverine.
Yeah.
And he looks really good in this
one. The evolution is incredible. He went, I wouldn't call him scrawny in the first movie, but he's just kind of like a normal dude with the hair up. He's in shape. But in this, he's just a monster.
He looks aged and really strong, which is, I think, Wolverine.
Good look for him.
Yeah, grizzly. You know, he shouldn't be, like, too clean.
Speaking of grizzly, it starts out with a bear
scene.
Yeah.
With the arrow.
Where it like pisses on something. I remember the bear peeing.
The bear pees. I like that's what you take out.
Yeah.
The bear gets hunted, but then it's not like properly put down, and so he has got words with the guys in the loft.
Well, they use poison arrows.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I don't use poison arrows. Oh, yeah, well, then if I stab you with one of these arrows, it shouldn't make a big deal to you, right?
Yeah, he's basically living as Grizzly Man in the woods.
Yeah, yeah, he's got, like, a big-ass beard and long hair, and he's just, like, bummed about Gene.
This is
the first movie that takes place chronologically after X3.
Yeah.
So, like, the last thing that happened that we knew of is he killed Gene and then got really bummed out and left.
Yeah. But
so it opens with him, though, on saving a soldier from the atom bomb, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
And that was really neat.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I guess it was Nagasaki, right? It wasn't Hiroshima. At least as far as I could tell.
I don't think it's really clear. Well, you know what? No, it is, because I think it is Nagasaki, because they go back.
Yeah.
Because they go back later. And they go back to the well that mm-hmm. they were in. So I think it was Nagasaki.
But man, that well scene where he's getting all burnt up while saving the guy was awesome.
It's great visually, which I actually have to say is why I think this movie appeals to me most. It just looks cool.
Yeah.
Like, it has that heightened reality, but not to the point of annoying. It's just mm-hmm. it's just a comic book movie. And they obviously take liberties with logic, because if the atom bomb went off outside the well,
a well is not going to save
you. And Wolverine's sorry. Just like hugging you for warmth. They're not going to not die of radiation poisoning.
Well, the truth of that is that there were people at Ground Zero who survived.
Who survived and
lived 40, 50 years.
That's insane.
There are things that go into the level of specific radiation that you receive. One, those bombs were really comparatively low yield bombs.
Yeah, compared to what we have now.
And people got irradiated, people died, people got burned to death. Those things happen. But
so what you're saying is that they should get over it.
Yeah. No, yeah, come on.
I could have survived that. What about the pussies?
it's not outside of the realm of believability. It's unlikely.
Yeah.
But it's like, I wasn't like, if they had been at Ground Zero and the well was there, but they were pretty far away mm-hmm. from the central target.
Yeah, I guess since exceptions do exist in real life, then this pill can be swallowed.
Yeah, absolutely. But it looked, like Amanda said, it looked really cool.
It was neat.
Again, it was sort of like the scene in Last Stand where Wolverine's climbing towards Jean and just getting wrecked. It's just always interesting to see his regenerative powers like at their best.
Yeah, whenever they do that, I think it's always amazing. Because it's the thing about it, too, is it's really fucking painful. It hurt. Like, he's not feeling the pain. Yeah. He's feeling the feeling of being burnt alive.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what's so intense about it. It's like, you know, when you risk your life for someone, you usually die and don't have to feel that pain as much.
Yeah.
He's constantly risking his life for people and taking all of that.
Yeah,
in.
Taking the
and
burden of it.
That's what makes him such a truly interesting character. He knows how painful it is, you know?
Yeah.
And he still keeps going.
Yeah, he's like the Monster Christ.
Yeah.
Accepting all of the suffering.
That'd be a great metal band name.
Monster Christ.
Hello, what's going on? We're Monster Christ. Thanks for coming out.
Start it, Josh.
Do it.
It's pronounced God's cock.
But yeah, so after we get the flashback, then we, you know, flash forward to modern day. And like we said, he was in the woods, like freaking out for a while. And
girl
then
finds him.
Yeah, and who?
The girl finds him in the bar when he's writing.
Is it
right?
Yukio?
Yes. Yukio. I think
there's
that's
two girls. There's Mariko, which is a girl he kind of hooks up with, and then there's Yukio, which is like assistant.
Okay. The martial artist one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who has the maybe mutant power? Like,
it's I can see how you die.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like she's sort of fortune telling, but not really. Just specifically about your death.
That is the worst mutant power ever.
I think they sort of address that in the movie. Is that it's like this burden
like
she
really
carries
sad.
That sucks.
I would, if I got a mutant power and I could pick it, I'd probably just like have the mutant power to like clean things without doing anything or something like that. Just
so Mary
practical.
Poppins.
Yeah, something very practical. Yeah. There you go.
Josh has just chosen to be Mary Poppins out of any superhero in the history
of
superheroes.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so he gets dragged to Japan because the person he saved in the beginning of the movie is now essentially on his way out.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least you're led to believe that's the case.
On the craziest bed ever.
Yeah, on the pin needle, the 1993 pin needle impression bed.
It's just the top half of that. You're laying on the top half and the bottom half has got motors just like making
adjusting.
You comfy.
Yeah, adjusting you all the time.
Like, even to make him point, it, like, lifts up his arm for him.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
Yeah, it's awesome. Actually, I actually do really like it. It's silly, but I like it.
You put it on massage mode?
Yeah.
But yeah, so he basically is brought in and for this the Japanese guy's final moment, and we're led to believe, whether or not you buy it or not, because I didn't at all, that he's dead, that he passes away.
But he wants Wolverine's power. He says, hey, like, in exchange for letting you be mortal and letting you die, which is what you want because you're so guilt-ridden, you give me your power, so I'll live.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh, can I think about it kind of thing? And then, oh, too late.
Oh, too late. He's dead. Yeah. And then basically the rest of the movie is almost like an action noir.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this sort of mystery thriller. You're trying to figure out put the puzzle pieces together. It's not like a brilliant mystery, but it's enough. It suffices. And actually the reveal I didn't anticipate
at all.
Like I remember watching the trailers for this and just seeing Silver Samurai as like this giant robot and being like, that is fucking dumb. Because Silver Samurai is a real character and he's not a fucking robot in the comics. Just put the real Silver Samurai in there. Why do we have to do robots? And then they kind of justified it. And when that helmet opens up and you see it's the Japanese guy, like really old and gnarly and just like kicking ass, I was like, oh, you know what? I really enjoy this, actually.
What I didn't like about the twist was I didn't understand, or I didn't feel it was explained enough, at least for my taste, why the guy who went from being so grateful to Wolverine and wanting to live an honorable life to, I'm super douchey, I want to live forever and I'll kill anyone who won't let me live forever.
Well, I don't think it was ever the former. I think that he was just saying like, oh shit, I'm gonna die, and I remember that guy who could live forever, let me see if I can't get me some of that.
There was obviously some sort of emotional bond to Wolverine besides just knowing he could potentially save his life.
Well, okay.
I mean, he gave him his sword in that scene, which is like as they reflected, it was a really big deal.
I think it started out with, hey, let me help you out. And like, also, I really want you to let me help you out because it serves me well. And then Wolverine said like, no, thanks. He went like, oh, fuck, I'm gonna have to do this now. Then.
Yeah. Which is, it's, considering their history, kind of a shitty 180, but, you know, he turns out to be kind of a shitty guy, so.
But then I also didn't understand the granddaughter's secret boyfriend, who is, like, doing everything he can to protect her, and then realizes that it's the grandfather who's been trying to hurt her the whole time, but still protects the grandfather out of honor. Like,
Richard,
like,
he's an honorable man.
Yeah, it was just, like, because, like, the whole scene, the whole time, like, she's there. She can tell him, oh, stop. Wolverine's here to help us. But he's got all these guys shooting anchors and arrows and stuff into him.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, that was awesome.
That scene's amazing.
I just don't understand. Like,
the loyalty.
Come on. It's like, I guess it's like, to me, it's like, I get both ways, but I'm so I disagree.
Yeah.
It's like,
but tell me if I'm completely off base, but Japanese culture, it's like the men of the family, it's like you are now, yes, you're married to the girl, but the father is who your true loyalty is, and like very, you know, cultural, you know, not like, saying
like
everyone,
most, like
but
most cultures, it's very paternal, very like machismo.
Yeah,
exactly. So that, yeah, that's the scene is he's trying to get into the layer or whatever. I want to say
the tower.
The tower.
The infinite tower.
So, oh, yeah. They just fall down forever.
Oh, which I totally called. Like, when he first gets to the house and he's like, oh, look, why don't you look at these books of things we built? First page he opens to is this gigantic tower. It's
probably going to go there.
Yeah, this is where we're going to be.
Yeah, that's where we're going to end up.
But he's going through the town and there's all these ninjas who are, like, hiding on rooftops, and he's going down this main street and just gets arrow after arrow shot at him. Arrows with like rope attached to them still. And he's like this, and by the end, like a Macy's Thanksgiving Day float.
Yeah.
And he's just like being trying dragged. And I mean, it's really impressive.
Yeah, cool imagery.
There's another part of this movie that we haven't talked about at all that I actually really liked, which is an interesting inclusion, but Viper.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the main,
like, poison ivy of the Marvel.
Oh, that's
unit.
Right.
She's a weird inclusion because she's actually more an Avengers character, as I understand her, because she's in Hydra. She's Madame Hydra, but she also goes by Viper. She's kind of weird. She's the one who, like, she kisses him, or she slips something into his drink or kisses him or something. Oh, yeah, she kisses him when he's asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And slips, like, this weird bug into him that, like, fucks with his heart. And he can't heal.
Yeah, and, like, fucks with his healing power.
Which then he has to literally
extract.
Cut into himself and like yank it off of his
heart.
That
was
in
crazy.
What
this
I think
in
is
that bed.
Which I think is probably the most gruesome this franchise ever gets in the best possible way.
Yeah.
It is that was cool. Awesome scene. Just watching his fist way up into his like chest cavity is awesome. It's cool.
Yeah.
Cool scene. I can't believe they actually got it in for a PG-13 movie. They hit it well enough, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, really, really awesome.
Yeah, and she was interesting because she was just helping to steal the powers, essentially, or...
Yeah, I don't know what her compensation was.
I mean, I think she was just getting paid out the ass.
Yeah.
I think she was just getting a lot of money. But then she's involved in the fight of the Ember. She's fighting Yukio or Mariko. She's fighting one of the girls in the big tower. And, like, she's really cool because, like, there's a part where she has to shed because she's, like, Mitsuri and her hair comes off. And she just, like, takes her nail
And just splits
it right down her face and it just peels her face off. It was really cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
Like, and the way she dies is great.
Oh yeah.
One of the best kills in the whole franchise.
The elevator thing, right?
There's like a chain, a winch thing where like one end of it's going down and one of it's going up and somebody just hooks her to the end that's going up and she just goes up and gets her neck like
snapped by the weight, the counterweight.
That was one of the craziest death scenes in a movie I've seen, like let alone in the X-Men franchise. Like that, I mean, come on.
It's just so unexpected.
Well, yeah, it was one of those great kills like in the Raid or in the like Kiss of the Dragon where like it's just fight, whoa, that person is now suddenly dead.
Yeah,
like,
super dead.
Well,
yeah.
And dead as a result of the nature of the fight and the environment, which is good.
Yeah, it's like in video games when they started implementing like you could do environment or background kills, like in Mortal Kombat 2, knocking them off the bridge or something. It was just like, it's just exciting to know that the place you're in and where you're fighting has a purpose and you're not just there just to be there. Which actually was, I think, the other cool thing about the train action sequence in this movie, which I remember seeing one shot of in the trailer and just going, that's going to be crappy. But it ended up being really cool.
Oh, yeah.
It looks good.
And on the bullet train fighting on top of it.
Yeah. And they just you keep using like the wind to like slide them back to the next part of the fight.
Oh, yeah. My favorite part of that was the last guy he was fighting against. Like they were basically just like in a face off and like they kept having to like jump over or duck under like these signs. Yeah. And like Wolverine keeps like jumping and then like fakes out like he's going to jump when a sign's coming and the guy jumps up and just gets splattered.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really great. I guess this movie as close to it could be felt like a video game.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, oh, okay, we have the train action sequence, like in Resident Evil, and then by the end, we're fighting a giant robot. You know, there was like a boss battle.
And you got to know the secret to holding the sword.
Yeah.
You know, what's so funny is like, I wonder how this movie did because obviously the X-Men and Wolverine, the first Origins one, left a bad taste in my mouth. So I was like, I'm not going to go see this in the movie.
Yeah, I refused to see it, actually.
And, you know, standalone movie, like if you just separate it out of that, it's a solid film.
Yeah, like I said, of all of the seven movies we watched in this franchise, the only one, and just so listeners know, I bought every movie on Blu-ray to do this marathon. I got rid of all of them except of Wolverine. Like it's the only one I could ever see myself sitting through again. But you know, who knows, time may tell that like 10 years from now I'll feel the same way about it as I did about X-Men 1. It may just
and
X2, like it just might not feel fresh. But as of right now, it's the only one I could see myself watching
again. Yeah, I'd say, listeners, if you've not seen it, you should see it. It's worth a watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even if you're burnt by the fact that Aronofsky was going to direct it and got kicked out and now Mangold did it, like, he did a good job with it. I don't know. It's obviously not what Aronofsky would have done, and it's a very different tone than most of his movies, but it's worth seeing.
This movie, just so you know, box office-wise, it made $12 million more than its budget, I think.
In the U.S., you mean? Or
no,
even international?
Oh, domestic, yeah. Oh, okay. So it made
money.
I'm sure
it made money. I'm sorry. It made like, it was pretty successful. Okay, worldwide it was $414 million and its budget was $112, I think.
Hmm.
Yeah, so.
Well, it did enough.
That's good.
Yeah,
at least I'm glad. I think it deserved it, and I didn't want it to be overshadowed by all the other shit. Previously, so.
Yeah. It was just one of those movies that was really isolated and knew what it wanted to do and just executed it. There wasn't a lot of frivolous stuff added in.
And Hugh Jackman is a great lead. He just is.
He's just appealing.
Hugh Jackman, really great.
And just, like, we mentioned it already before, but just keeping it simple, like, it's a small cast. Like, we don't need every X-Men having, like, screen time. It's like, there are other mutants, but it's not about them. It's not about a team of mutants. It's just him.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think the most important thing before we move on that we need to talk about in this movie was the Love Hotel mission to Mars choice, yeah. which was, I thought, pretty awesome. Because when you list it, when they like listed off the different choices, we all immediately go, Mission to Mars.
Yeah, and they did.
And they did.
That was awesome.
Because it's amazing. All right, so I guess we're moving on to the final film in the franchise, which is X-Men Days of Future Past.
If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do.
I was pleasantly surprised, yeah, actually, with this one as well.
I had a good time.
I thought, I was like, I don't know about this, and the first one was really good, but I couldn't imagine them doing another good movie, and I liked it. I saw it twice in the theater, mm-hmm. and I know you guys didn't like the Sentinels, but I like them.
I like the old Sentinels.
The robot Sentinels.
Yeah. I like the new ones fine. I thought they were fun.
The new ones, to me, it seemed like their design was just very muddy.
Yeah.
And also, they're basically just that thing from there's a destroyer from Thor.
Yeah. Which I loved, so I guess that's why I was in.
But the destroyer from Thor was cooler.
Because that one had, it was metal parts, and it actually looked like it had some sort of function to it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the Sentinels were just big, it looked like kind of just unpainted Stretch Armstrongs mm-hmm. or something.
Well, and if they have every mutant power that's conceivable, they don't go about using them in a very logical or easy. It's like, because I still really don't understand how they work.
Mm-hmm.
It's really weird though that they built the whole thing around you got to stop Bolivar Trask from getting Mystique's DNA because Mystique's DNA is the one that they use so that they can adapt and learn mm-hmm. these powers. But that's Rogue.
Yeah,
right.
Mystique doesn't have the ability to use other people's powers, as witnessed in the first movie when Wolverine chops off her claws.
Yeah.
So the fact that these Sentinels are adapting and using powers of other mutants does not make any fucking sense. It's like, again, fuck you, Bryan Singer. You just walk in and you put stuff in because oh, that's the name. That's a Sentinel. So it's on screen. I gave you what you wanted, but you didn't take any time to consider what it actually meant to the universe.
Well, to be fair, just... The in the comics there is modern Sentinels and then there are Days of Future Past Sentinels which mm-hmm. do not look like modern Sentinels.
Yeah,
they have an overhaul and they look different. They don't look like the ones in the movie, but they do have a different look in the
future. But did the logic of them having powers come from Mystique's DNA?
No, I'm exactly. just talking about appearance.
Which yeah, I'm saying he just throws stuff in to just give you hey, remember that existing? Here it is on screen. But he doesn't actually take the time to make it work.
Well, it's really weird too, because the only time that you ever, I think the only time I can think of where you see Rogue use that power and where she absorbs people's powers is in the first movie. She does it to Wolverine heal from the stab, and then she does it to Magneto because Magneto makes her.
Yeah,
and those are both instances that Bryan Singer oversaw.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't use her for that?
Because he's a shit director. He just sucks.
And I don't understand the logic of this future where they're so hell-bent on capturing and killing mutants that the entire world has fallen apart because they're just throwing every dollar they have into capturing mutants. It's maybe you should start fixing this city up a little bit.
You lost sight of the big picture there.
Yeah.
Guys.
I thought the opening was... good energy, the fact the Sentinels coming, the group of mutants are mm-hmm. trying to fend them off. Ellen Page's character is sending mm-hmm. What's that other guy? Bishop?
Bishop.
Yes. Bishop back.
Do you call him Bishop?
Bishop.
Did you just call Bishop a bitch?
No. Bishop.
Yeah, Bishop.
Bishop. Back in to warn himself.
Yeah.
And then the group that the Sentinels are coming. I thought that was a really interesting kind of plot because it was simple. It was really simple. There's nothing muddy about it. It's just, this is what they keep trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that so many of them died before, it was, that was cool. They were getting killed. They were getting slaughtered and they're like, holy crap, is this real? And then they go, it is, but we have to reset each time. And I just thought that was interesting.
It was cool to finally see there's a lot of cool mutants to see showcased and that stuff, but I finally got to see Colossus do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I saw as much as I could possibly see Colossus do stuff. Because, he just hits things. But he actually was in a fight. You actually saw him a couple of times, like trading blows and stuff, and that was cool.
But his CG was a bit poor, but
yeah, he didn't look as good as he could have. But I mean, I enjoyed that he finally got some screen time, yeah. Other than just like, let me help you get the fuck out of here, Colossus.
Yeah,
like
no one's got anything to say to you, Colossus. Get out of here.
they did a good job though with Blink. I think that
she looked good.
She looked good, and they used her powers interestingly. Thank you, Portal.
well. They use her powers interestingly, but then she used her powers stupidly.
Oh yeah, because she can just cut them in half with their portals, but then like just like wants to cut off one of their arms and goes, you know, I don't think I'm ever gonna try that again.
Yeah. Wait, does she actually control the duration of the portal, or yeah. does she, yeah. or does the portal yeah. just come out I mean, and lasts for 5 seconds? Because it seemed like it was an accident to me when I was watching. I was like, it accidentally closed on the Sentinel because it just happened to be the timing of it.
She's definitely controlling them. Otherwise, I think it was an accident in as much as she was hoping that it wouldn't come through after them, but mm-hmm. when it did, like it lost an arm when it closed on it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it just
I'd
seemed,
just be popping their heads off.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would just be. Yeah, Blink could have been much more powerful than she was.
She could have just cut their ships in half. I mean, it goes back to like the storm power. Mm-hmm. Storm, just use lightning. No, tornadoes. just use lightning, and then everything will be all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bishop looked good.
Yeah, he looked like Bishop should
not
look.
Have a good power. So
it absorb really... energy. Well, it's the same power as Kevin Bacon.
No, because his has to be channeled through his gun. And
yeah.
But that's still cool. I like his. Yeah, I like his energy.
I do like Bishop.
I'm saying
I like
Bishop his energy was again. Positive. I think yeah. as a character, he's a little boring in mm-hmm. terms of his power. But like, they did him well. I yeah. mean, he yeah. looked good.
Yeah,
I like that you have to charge him up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like it's like, oh, here, you just gotta give Bishop a little bit of power so we can go kick some ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it works best when he's in a firefight with somebody else and they don't know, and they're like shooting him, and he's just able to.
Yeah,
just
yeah. He looked back. The part. I think they executed him as like what his mutant powers are really well. But I don't know. I don't know if the actor was just kind of boring or they just didn't give him anything to work with.
Well, it's a huge ensemble movie, and he was like, in terms of importance, he was down in
very,
the
20s. Very low. I guess that's what it is that annoys me about the Bryan Singer movies in general is, again, which we've mentioned before, but it's like you watch the trailer, you go, oh man, Bishop's going to be in this movie. Blink's going to be in this movie. Mm. Oh, all these characters I know and love. And then they're there for like 20 seconds and you don't actually get to engage with them in any real way. Mm. I guess that's why the Wolverine works so well. It's like, oh, I'm seeing Wolverine be Wolverine, you know?
Yeah.
So I was just like, when this movie ended and I didn't really feel satisfied with Bishop because I didn't really get to see him do
that's
anything.
That's how I felt with Colossus and all the last
yeah.
movies. It was just like, well, he was there, but he didn't like do anything.
Yeah. It's just one of those cases where they think quantity is better than quality kind of thing. It's like, just get him in there.
Look, it's just butts and seats. And if yeah. you show a trailer with Bishop in it, then you know the people who like Bishop are going to be like, oh shit, yeah, Bishop's finally going to be in this movie, and they'll go and see it.
Yeah. Yeah. But as far as the actual, like Amanda was saying, the actual time travel, like using mm-hmm. Ellen Page, Kitty Pryde's ability simple. To like send the mind back and all mm-hmm. that stuff. Yeah. Simple, effective. Mm-hmm. It's very akin to the real story of Days of Future Past. Like the whole, they stuck true to the theme of this movie, I think, fairly well.
Yeah. And so we see Professor X and Magneto come in with Storm, right? And mm-hmm. Is Storm there at that point?
You mean
Storm shows up
when they first send Wolverine
when
back?
When they first come in.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Storm,
yeah, she's
Storm's
there,
in that battle, yeah.
And
yeah.
Wolverine's there.
Fucking Storm.
So that was interesting. What I think I will give mad props to in this whole series is that they use the same actors, and like to me mm-hmm. that's awesome that they brought mm-hmm. all the same people back for those, even just we said the Rebecca Romijn for like a second, like that kind of to me is like they're really like paying attention to what the fans would want, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so bringing all the same actors, like,
except for Halle Berry, which everybody wished they would have replaced.
Yeah.
Well, I just wish, even if they brought her back, I just wanted her to do something. Yeah. Like that's directing too, like I have to say, mm-hmm. not just her being shitty anyways. But so then,
at least we got to see her get killed. That
yeah,
was
and that was great. But yeah, so then they say Wolverine is the only one we can send back because he's the one who can. She can't send people back that far, and if she sends him back and something goes wrong, he's the only person who could maybe survive it.
I guess the mental stress,
the mental strain of it.
Break you.
Yeah, exactly.
But since Wolverine has regenerative powers, like he can go back further.
Yeah,
right. But I like the Bill and Ted time travel logic of that time in the. Even though in their future present, it's still moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Like however much time he's spending in the past is elapsing in the future.
Which is great. That's so like
he could just step on an ant walking out of his room after he puts on his clothes because he's completely butt naked.
Oh, yeah. Super naked Nate's Wolverine.
So like, that can awesome.
Affect things yeah. enough that like what was going on and why he's back there is just gone now.
Yeah.
It is interesting that like they are stuck doing that in the future until he does the specific thing that he was sent back to do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is neat. Yeah, I like the opening, yes, he was nakey-nake, which is funny. There's like little kids in the theater next to me who giggled, which made me laugh.
Yeah, it's weird. If you had, I mean, I guess under certain circumstances, I would believe it. But if you'd have told me when I was a kid, like, there's going to be an X-Men movie where you basically see Wolverine's, like, totally naked, like without, like, his butt, mm-hmm. with his back to you. I would have been like, unless it's in Weapon X, I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah, there's no reason.
But
but there was a reason.
There was a reason.
Yeah, I loved it. I love that he was naked and then those mobster type guys come in and he's been sleeping with the mobster boss's daughter. Yeah. And like, he's like, listen, it's not, I didn't do this, which is so funny because imagine yourself getting shot back to when you were a kid or something and you're mentally the same now and then you're doing something stupid and you're just like, shit, like, yes, I know this was stupid, but it's not me. And he's trying to explain it, but instead just, like, kicks super ass, like, yeah. the way... And the whole set, when he looks out the window, and it's, what, it's 70s, right?
Yeah.
Looks great. Everything looks great. And the music, I thought, was really good in this.
I thought the music was a little funny in that scene, because it goes straight to, like...
Yeah.
Which is, like, it's very, like, you're in the 70s now!
This is what the 70s sounds like.
Yeah.
I like when he in that scene, when he starts getting shot, and since it's before he had the metal skeleton... He starts mm-hmm. reacting like, ah, I forgot how much this hurts.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the claws come out and he remembers, oh, shit, I don't have my animanium yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was cool to see him bone claw. Bone claw. Yeah, that was nice.
And when he goes through the metal detector and doesn't go off, he's all, oh.
We didn't discuss in the last movie, he loses his claws.
Yes. Yes, that is true.
Because the guy cuts him off and it's really gross. And like drills into his claws.
I totally forgot about that scene. Yeah, I totally forgot.
The Silver Samurai like drills into his claws, and that's how he sucks out the like the
through the marrow, like something.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he's hanging off the edge there.
Gross.
Yeah, that is really, really nuts.
So we can continue now. But yeah, bone claws.
Actually, you mentioned like how nice this movie looked, and for me, despite the fact that we're back to Bryan Singer production design, which I'm still not too keen on. There was a real problem for me watching this movie in the theaters because the whole time I felt like I was watching like digital video, like home video. And I kept leaning over to you going, is there something weird about the way this movie looks? It doesn't look like it was like film. It doesn't look like a big budget film movie. And it really took me out of it for a lot of the movie. And then I got home and researched it and it wasn't shot on film. It was shot digitally, which a lot of movies are now. So that's understandable. But the reason I discovered it looked strange was because it was shot natively for 3D. They used like the whole two camera, like 3D setup. And the frame rate was different than it should have been for just a proper like 2D like shooting process. Right. So that we saw it 2D because most of us at this table just can't stand 3D movies. Yeah. So we opted for the 2D. And I guess in the conversion process, when you shoot for 3D and then just screen it 2D, it doesn't look right. Mm. There's just something about it frame rate wise. I was like, it looks like we're watching like BBC or something like it was like PAL or
I didn't know people still do that like the shoot with the two camera rig. I mean,
mm-hmm. yeah, it was the Arri Alexa was like one of the first like fully 3D twin camera digital processes like for like a movie of this size.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I just remember thinking like a man remembers. I kept leaning over, I was like, there's something weird about this.
You know, it's funny. I thought it was purposeful, which is weird because. It kind of brought me back to that time, you know, or that it was a little grittier because it was in the past. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, there were so many shots where I just felt like I couldn't get real focus on anybody.
Well, it was when like it was everything light, right? When it was worse when it was lighter.
When it was really
in the past,
bright.
When he goes in the past, everything was much brighter than the future, which was a good juxtaposition, too. I thought they purposely did that. Yeah. So I didn't really notice. I wasn't taken back by it by any means. I just thought, oh, that's an interesting touch. I noticed that it was different, but I was like, oh, maybe they're doing it because it's in the 70s.
Yeah.
But it wasn't purposeful in that way.
Yeah, I just remember one very specific shot where Magneto's like walking through a subway.
Oh, yeah.
And I just was like, this looks like, weird. It looks so low budget to me. I was just like, wow, this is like a $200 million movie, and this looks like it was shot on like home video.
It's funny they can't very do it strange. Better than that. It's weird.
But
So basically the whole plot is that Wolverine has to go back to stop Mystique from killing Trust. What's his name?
Boulevard Trask.
Peter Dinklage, who is awesome. Because what he's doing is experimenting on mutants to get their powers in order to make Sentinels, to detect mutants and destroy them, or at least protect the human race from them.
Well, that's what he's going to do. Right now, he just has robots that detect and want to kill.
And what happens is Mystique assassinates him, and then that sets off the alarm for everyone to go, we need to take care of mutants. So that's where their pleasant surprise for me came in, because I thought, you know, him and Magneto are separate. It's going to be what the X-Men are now. But really, there's this whole other side story. And then that they need Magneto to help them with this, to find Mystique and stop her, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
I was glad that they were together again, even though... But very well explained. They're kind of like what... The scene in the airplane was probably one of the best scenes in the whole movie, where Fassbender as Magneto just lays into Professor X. Because, you know... You think that Professor X is more in the right, but really, in that, he lays out how wrong he is, and for so many reasons, and what he did to Mystique that led her to this, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, they did a good job juggling the whole love-hate relationship between Magneto and Professor X in this, you know, which, you know, could get boring. I mean, we've all seen so many countless seasons of the cartoon and comics, but it was, again, Fassbender brings a good weight to most of the drama in this movie.
So Magneto was in a facility under the Pentagon, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was originally... What was it made for originally? It was like a bunker that they made.
Yeah.
It was like a paranoia bunker that they just converted because it's all concrete.
Mm-hmm. I love the escape sequence.
Yeah, Quicksilver... I thought it was fun. I'll bring all that stuff in with Quicksilver. It was really fun.
Like, yeah,
he looks stupid, but it was a cool scene.
It's the 70s, so I mean... And not saying that he should look stupid, but at least it's like... It's not a modern costume. It's kind of like an old sensibility, I guess, that they're trying to apply to it.
Yeah. Again, it's just the hair and stuff just looks too fake. Like, it doesn't seem like what he would actually look like in the 70s. It's like a modern 70s kind of thing. But anyway, as dumb as he looked, the scene actually ended up being kind of cool. And I had a lot of hateful expectations against him and all those Big Mac commercials and shit. I was just like...
Burger King, yeah.
Or Burger
Carl's
King,
Jr. yeah. Carl's Jr. Guys, get your shit together.
Carl's Jr., whatever it was. Every time that commercial came on, I was like, well, Quicksilver looks awful. I'm not going to like this movie at all. But scene was cool.
And he wasn't
a good character.
And he wasn't in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which is silly, because, I mean, if you think about it practically, it's like, you need to come with us on everything because you just made this 1,000 times easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just kidding, go back to your home.
Again, just throw him in there for a scene, and then logically, just whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but it was really fun when you actually see his perspective of what happens when he's moving in fast mode, and he, like, destroys all those guards and stuff in the kitchen scene. It was very fun.
He sets everything up.
And then, I guess last thing I'll say about just the general plot line for me was that, to me, the Sentinels, I know we talked about them a little bit, but the Sentinels are actually quite a disappointment to me. I don't give a shit about the future Mystique Sentinels at all. And then the fact that we saw, like, regular Sentinels flying around as robots almost made me happy. But one, the scale was all wrong, and I never got the sense of being like this monstrosity of a robot, like, crushing towns, like, I, you know, identify yourself, mutants. Like, that never...
I wish they talked, absolutely.
Yeah, like, it just never hit the tone I wanted.
Did you want them to be more, like, Terminator-esque, kind of?
No,
they're, like, they're like building-sized.
It's kind of like the Iron Giant.
Yeah, they're supposed to be huge.
And that's weird. Why didn't they go for that? Because the scale is scary. Like,
I guess because they're prototypes.
Yeah. I enjoyed them, but I would have enjoyed it more if they were more like the actual Sentinels, which is basically just like, take the look kind of what they look like from the past.
Yeah.
That was approximately what they look like. And then make that like the Iron Giant without flying.
That's neat.
And like, they just walk around just fucking stomping shit and blasting things and like just wrecking mutants.
Wow,
and
that's crazy.
That would have been really fun. And all we got to see was really Wolverine and Hank take one on, and like, all they do is just machine gun a little bit, and they fly and do nothing.
Yeah.
And, like, I liked that they were there. I liked that they had a presence, and I liked that there was a little bit of interaction, but I would have liked it more.
Yeah,
I was... What would have been cool is if they got set loose on a town. And,
exactly.
Like, the X-Men had to just go in and, like, stop them.
Yeah, yeah. Give us a Sentinel action sequence as it should have been given to us.
Yeah.
Wasted.
Because all that happened was, so Magneto turns and says, you know, to really stop this future, we have to kill Mystique.
Yeah.
And Professor X says, do not do that. And that's at the point where Wolverine's mind starts slipping and he gets confused and doesn't know why he's there.
Mm-hmm. He sees Stryker and it, like, causes yeah. him to freak
right.
out.
Right. Yeah. He has like post-traumatic from seeing Stryker. And that's where in the present day he stabs Ellen Page like he did with Rogue. Mm-hmm. And she has to keep going, which is like
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
But then Fassbender like shoots a Mystique or in the leg, which mm-hmm. I thought was cool.
Well, he magic bullets it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he magic bullets it. Yeah, and then it goes down and shoots her in the leg, and that's how he's able to drag her yeah, back, which is, I yeah. thought was fun.
Great, because she's like screaming in agony while yeah. it's happening, which you would be.
Yeah, it's like ripping through her still, which I thought was really fun. And then the Beast fight with the fountain and stuff mm-hmm. with him was interesting. I don't know. It was, you know, that part was fun.
Yeah, it was decent. It was like decent action.
But they got some of her blood at that point. That was the problem, right. is that he mm-hmm. shot her, and then her blood got taken, sampled of
yeah.
from that.
I mean, it wasn't enough to really super advance the project, but it was enough to get him started.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then again, I know, Josh, you avoid trailers now, but to avoid disappointment and things, but again, like the whole lifting of the stadium kind of underwhelmed me. It was just like, okay, you lifted a stadium and then you dropped it and then
you trapped them.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's like it was way too much for what was going on. It's like,
yeah.
I don't really see why you needed to do that to give yourself privacy.
I think Magneto just has a really asshole, like, idea about like showing off and destroying really awesome architecture, like,
just
for
like
no reason.
That killed.
Yeah, because yeah. like, it was
just
raining debris.
A stadium down on top of
the White House.
Like, well, the White House, the area around the White House is not as big as a stadium.
Yeah, definitely
and
not.
There's a bunch of stuff around.
Because DC's
it.
Tiny, mm-hmm. so. Yeah, I don't know. I just thought, again, it was just like Last Stand. It's like, I'm going to destroy the Golden Gate for no reason. So, I'm going to destroy this building for no reason.
So what he did was he went and fixed the Sentinels so they didn't have... he rewired them, essentially.
Used railroad track to, like... something
like rewire science technology
it's yeah
and then so that's how he was able to rewire them to work in his command and then mm-hmm. opposite it was like humans were similar to the first movie isn't that
yeah well the Cerebro switch you mean
is that kind of what happened with the Sentinels because they didn't
Well, there is a point where he literally just says, do what you were made to, so that they would fight Hank and Wolverine.
Oh, the
mutants.
So maybe not
completely.
So
he gets them back to what they're... I don't know. He basically just puts in a voice command thing in the 70s.
Nixon is there, which is fine.
It was fine.
I always feel like they do Nixon wrong. Like, they do the caricature. It's like if taking the Nixon mask as the example of doing what Nixon looks like.
The only movie that ever did Nixon right was Black Dynamite. That's the only
I kind of liked the Nixon as much as I don't really care for the movie in Watchmen.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he was okay.
He was super sweaty.
Yeah.
But I did like that they're in a bunker, like in a big metal box, and Magneto just basically just yoink.
Well, like, it up out. There's a second where he's just like, "Where are you? I found you." And he just goes, he just brings it out of the ground.
Yeah.
So, and then the present time, that's the Sentinels are coming, but they can't take Wolverine out of this, right? Because it would, I mean, obviously they're trying to get him to do what he's supposed to before that, but that's a lot of high action. And like I said, Storm gets fucking massacred, which was rad. You don't ever get to see that. Yeah, everyone gets really messed up. And
like,
that
everybody
was exciting.
Dies
Magneto
except for like...
puts all the stuff on the door. And then he gets transported inside. That was neat.
Who lives? It's like...
None of the ones fighting.
Magneto and Professor X
and Ellen Page.
Rogue and Wolverine are the only ones that have not been
Kitty
killed.
Page.
And like they're
right.
about to.
Kitty
yeah.
Page.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Kitty Page. There you go. Yeah. there's one thing in this movie that I actually didn't enjoy that I wish they would have sped up a little bit. There's a whole period of the movie where Wolverine's trying to get Professor X to get his powers back.
Yeah.
To believe it himself. And like... I get it because, you know, it's like the student has become the master kind of because Professor X has to, like, do this for Wolverine. So now Wolverine has to try and do this for Professor X. But it took super long. It was like, I mean, the first time I was watching it, I was like, ugh, fast forward. Like, I know where this is going and I don't care.
Yeah, it was boring.
It took too long to do do it.
Yeah, this movie was too long in general.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you're dealing with multiple timelines and shit, but I honestly didn't feel like I was getting enough of each. Like, I don't think it was well balanced. Like, I like the future stuff better.
I don't think you're supposed to get a lot. I think that the future stuff is so bleak that it's just basically just like you see enough to know that everybody's constantly dying.
Yeah. Mm. I guess I just wanted to see more of that.
I liked the ultra happy ending.
Yeah, where so Mystique shows up as Nixon.
Scott's back, guys.
Cyclops. Oh, at the very, very end.
Yeah.
So the very end, obviously they accomplished their mission. Wolverine wakes up and he's at the school and everyone's back. Jean Grey's there.
Yeah, Jean Grey's back.
Cyclops. And then Kelsey Grammer comes back
for a shot, which is awesome.
Yeah, so that was fun. Tie-in. And then
Storm is alive again.
Anna Paquin's
in there. And
which... Is she mutant powered Anna Paquin or is she mutant cure?
Well, I think the mutant cure in the third one is not a forever thing because
that's true.
Magneto gets his powers back, and I guess we can assume that Mystique gets her powers back too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Sorry, that was one thing we never mentioned at the end of Wolverine, was the scene in the airport.
Oh, yeah.
That led into this movie, but
the wheelchair scene.
It's a totally unnecessary.
They have Professor
Tokyo drifting around.
Wait,
people.
You have to post this with the podcast. The best scene ever in all X-Men franchise.
Just him weaving through all of the people is super fucking funny.
I'll be there in a minute.
Like, why did you show all that?
Disneyland.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And then the great acknowledgement of Professor X just realizing. This is when Wolverine woke up from that history. Because he didn't know at what point Wolverine would remember or what point he would get put into. But, you know, clearly Professor X has that memory from when he was younger and Wolverine came back to him to tell him. So I thought that was a good tie-in. It was very simple and clean again.
And also it does a nice job of making sure that, like, the things that are shitty never happen and we can try and move on from them. Like X-Men 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, just kind of retcons it a little bit.
Also, it's unclear like what happens with Wolverine because he's basically drowned at the bottom of a pool of water.
Well, that's when Stryker finds him. Yeah.
Well, but it's Mystique.
Oh, right.
It's not Stryker. But yeah, basically he gets collected by Stryker Mystique, and you don't know what happens there. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Yeah, that was cool.
Because we never see him like extend his claws, and we don't know if he's metal.
Oh, he at that point he wasn't metal.
No, but when he comes back to
the
quote unquote present.
He always ends up with the medal. Yeah. They'll never not have that.
So then the post-credit scene is that Apocalypse guy?
Yes. It's going to be a.
Which was the worst post-credit scene in any of these movies. Like, not just X-Men, just in general.
Execution-wise, very bad.
Real bad. It looked like fucking...
Conceptually?
It looked like that fucking 10,000 BC movie where they had, like, uncomped shots of the pyramids, like, crumbling. It was just like, did anyone even look at this?
Yeah.
Like, how did this make it to screen? It's not even... Like, I could do better special effects than that.
It looked like a mid-90s screensaver to me.
Yeah.
it was... I'm wondering if they didn't have a plan for what the next movie was quite yet when they were filming. They're like, oh, okay, so now we definitely have the new story locked down. We need to shoot something real quick.
I don't know. They've known about going from Days of Future Past to Apocalypse for a while.
Really?
Yeah. It was pretty much a long time ago.
A while ago, yeah.
And just spatially, like, I wasn't sure what was going on. Like, I was like, is this in the present or is this back in the past?
It's in the past.
Yeah.
Because we've already been done going around so much in time.
Yeah.
That I was like, okay, wait, I guess this is the past.
Well, the since he's building the pyramids, you can assume.
But I couldn't tell what was going on.
Vegas,
I couldn't tell if he was unmaking them and then remaking them. I really wasn't sure what was happening because the pyramids didn't look like that. The pyramids weren't just stone. They were very ornate and crazy. Yeah. They weren't just sandstone bricks piled up on top of each other.
You were confused by the shitty design.
They are now.
Okay. Yeah. So, like,
don't get all smart on us, Richard.
That's why I was very confused. And then, plus, like...
made them tattered.
Yeah, they were like limestone, right?
Yeah. And plus, if Apocalypse was in the past, shouldn't he have a presence...
Now?
The present.
Oh, well, he's just been lying in wait until 2017 when the movie comes out because that's when his plan comes to.
That's when he'd make the most money box office. But yeah, overall, I'd say Days of Future Past, again, I have no intention of ever watching again. I just don't like the Singer movies. I just don't like them. This one wasn't atrocious. It didn't offend me. But I'm pretty sure 10 years from now, I'm going to look back. And if I did see it again, would hate it. I'm pretty sure. I don't know why. I just, that's just the feeling I get.
Well, I mean, I guess if you can look at the Nightcrawler thing and like acknowledge that it's cool in a second movie, but then it just doesn't lift the movie up.
Yeah.
Then it's always a possibility with this movie.
Yeah. But overall, marathon wise,
meh.
Eh. Not. I'd say it's pretty low on my list of marathons we've ever done.
It wasn't. Cool it wasn't arduous.
One. Yeah.
For me, like I was awake. I was conscious. I was interested.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had never seen the Wolverine.
Yeah, I hadn't either, actually.
Or obviously Days of Future Past. But so I was looking forward to. I was really excited to get to those moments.
Yeah.
So that kept me kind of energized throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, the next one, our next marathon.
Yeah, it's a good thing to bring up right now because Step Up 5, Step Up All In is coming out this month. And I've been talking about doing this marathon for literally years because it's one of my favorite franchises ever. I love dance movies. That's always been one of my favorite things. So now I actually have an excuse to make all of you sit through five of these fucking things.
Step Up movies.
Step Up movies. So, yeah, in the coming weeks, we will be posting the Step Up Cine Marathon podcast. It's five films, Step Up, Step Up to the Streets, Step Up 3D, Step Up Revolution, and Step Up All In. So strap in for that.
This is good because Step Up All In is like the All-Stars one.
Yeah, it's basically the Days of Future Past.
It's Fast Five. Step Up Dance. It's really the Fast Five of...
Yes. So yeah, so you can look forward to that. Most of you who listen to this or any of you listeners probably don't give a shit about Step Up, but give them a chance. 2 and 3, really good, really fun stuff.
4 is awful.
But
we'll get into
we'll
that.
We'll get into the details of that in the next podcast. We don't want to give away all our material.
Slurpees.
All right. Well, thanks you guys for watching the X-Men movies with us, and we will see you next month.
That concludes the second and final part of the X-Men podcast. Tune in for our next episode when we watch and discuss the movies of the Step Up franchise. As usual, we will be live tweeting our experience, so you can follow us on August 23rd starting at noon. You can find us at our Twitter handle, CineMarathonPod. That's CineMarathonPod. If you'd like to follow us on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/CineMarathon. And if you have any questions, comments, or any suggestions for movie marathons you'd like us to do, you can email us at CineMarathon@gmail.com. And all of this information can be found on our website at CineMarathonPodcast.com. Thanks for listening.